Hello. I am outside on the deck. Now I know for a fact some people are gonna think it's fucking hilarious how I say deck. But the wooden paneled area. The veranda, the outside wooden paneled area, the entertainment section. And it's quite loud. I can see on the recording in front of me, I can see the recording. What do you call that? The recording, you know, the waves, like a. It's like a heartbeat on a heartbeat monitor. Anyway, I can see that when I'm not talking, there's still a thick line indicating to me that there's a lot of background noise. And hopefully that's okay. Oh, listen to those birdies. Hey, mate. Hopefully that's all good. Maybe it'll add an even more relaxing element. You got the piano and now bloody birds. Oh. Jazz. Shh. I'm recording. My dog's out here as well in the entertainment area. And she has little to no respect of the podcast recording process. So, you'll have to forgive her if she barks. But I've had a pretty good week. I've had a pretty sweet week, actually. How's your week been? We're Wednesday now here in New Zealand, and I hope you're having a good time. Yesterday, oh no, the day before. Hang on. Oh fuck, it's spitting. Can see a tornado coming as well.
Fuck off. Fuck off, will ya?
Okay, we might have to move inside. No, we'll keep going for a little bit. My dad gave me his a guitar. His guitar. And I'm fucking over the moon about it because it's a sweet gat. Oh shit, no, I gotta go inside, hang on. Hi. We're back inside now. It was it literally started raining all over my laptop and my microphone. And I thought, you know what? This is below average. This is really not optimal. So I made a quick decision right there and then. Right, we're going inside. We're moving the party indoors. From the entertainment area to the lounge. Welcome to the lounge. It's quite echoey in here. Yeah, Dad gave me his guitar, and I've known this for a while, but it's really become obvious in the last week, and that is the fact that I'm quite the obsessive character type. Meaning when I'm into something, I'm into it. For example, when I was a young fella, when I was a young boy, I used to do circus. Sounds pretty whack, but I used to do, you know, juggling and all that type of fun stuff just for a laugh, you know, just for a good time. And I took a liking to unicycling and looked at that and went, fuck yeah, that looks like a lot of fun. I want to get into it. And so I think I either bought a unicycle, or I got my parents to buy me one, and I think I was about, I was intermediate age, so I would have been about 11 or 12, and at home we had this big outside flat area, and I just practiced the unicycle, which was so hard to learn. Like it's kind of like riding a bike. Like if I hopped on a unicycle now, I think I'd be able to ride it. So you just never forget. But before you know how to ride it, it's just fucking, sorry, flipping, difficult to learn. And anyway, I was just, and I think there's something about something that's difficult to learn that makes me obsessed with it. It makes me want to learn it more and more and more, and conquer it, and achieve it. And it's kind of like, I'll be a little 12-year-old Oshie will be hopping in bed and just thinking about it and just going, how can I ride that bloody one-wheel bike without falling on my fucking chin? And it's the same with, so yeah, my latest obsession is playing guitar, which is a lot of fun. And I've been wanting to get back into it for a long time, but just haven't really had the time, eh? Just been, when you're studying full time, it's, I don't know, it's 40, 50 hours a week or whatever. Any, I guess, extracurricular activities feels stressful because, you've got three assignments on the way or whatever. So with my broken kneecap, has been a little bit of a blessing in disguise. Oh, I don't want to call it a blessing because it's an awful thing to have happened, but it's been nice to be able to slow down and pick up the gat and slap a few strings. And the podcast, I definitely wouldn't have started this podcast if I didn't have the injury, so that's a good thing, surely. But yeah, so I was learning on guitar Californication by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, bit of a classic one, and Anthony Kiedis. This is something I learned ages ago. Anthony Kiedis, the lead singer of Red Hot Chili Peppers, was in Auckland somewhere around the mid-90s, like 1996 or something, because I think the album Californication came out in 1999, don't quote me on that. But so I think it was mid-90s. He was in Auckland, in New Zealand, walking along Queen Street at night, and a homeless lady said to him, "Psychic spies from China are trying to steal your mind's elation." And elation, if you're not sure what that is like joy and happiness. So the lady was saying to Anthony, there's fucking spies out there, mate, from China, and they're psychic, and they're trying to steal your mind's elation. They're trying to steal your happiness." And, one would argue that she's maybe a little bit whack or a little bit lost it in the brain department, but he went, "Oh, righto, yep, whatever, thank you. Cheers for that. Good advice. I will be looking out for those psychic spies, you crazy fucking." And he went and chucked in a song. If you know the song Californication, it starts with, "Psychic spies from China try to steal your mind's elation. Teenage girl." And so he chucked that in, and I don't know, it's just a quirky little fun fact linking the Red Hot Chili Peppers to little old New Zealand. But the topic for this podcast, if I haven't already told you, is basically gender conditioning. And if you've heard about gender conditioning, or you know what it is, maybe you haven't heard that term, but you'll know what it is when I start talking about it. It's basically the fact that people are taught or they learn what is acceptable to do and what is not acceptable to do based on what gender you are. And you know, there's a massive, massive list. Like, imagine if you wrote down the gender rules, the gender conditioning, like what is acceptable to do when you're a boy and what's acceptable to do when you're a girl. The list would be fucking endless. And the funny thing about it is that 100% of that list is arbitrary. Meaning, let's say, boys wear shorts and girls wear skirts. That's arbitrary because it has no reason. There's no good reasoning behind boys wearing shorts and girls wearing skirts. It's a style, and it's something that that I guess society has decided on and gone, that's the way it's going to be. And there's no real reason behind it. Maybe there is. Maybe I've just picked the one gender role with a reason. That'd be funny. But I don't actually think there is. I mean, shorts and skirts, like what would the reason be? Anyway, the point I'm making is that regardless of whether or not that one has a reason, as a general rule, they are arbitrary. Their meaning is zilch. It's just a cultural belief. Like, boys like blue, girls like pink. What's the reason behind that? It's automatic in our brains. You go blue, boy, pink, girl. Gender reveal, pop the balloon, fucking pink confetti comes out, oh, it's a girl. But like that example, that wasn't always the case. Not long ago, it was actually the other way around. Pink was a brave and daring colour suited for males, and blue was like a softer emotional colour associated with females. And that got switched around, and it was something to do, this is coming back to me now, it was something to do with advertising and marketing. There was a marketing ploy or campaign that labelled boys with blue and girls with pink. And it just totally switched it, and from there on out, that was the way of it, blue boy, pink girl. And marketing and advertising can bloody do that to a society, eh? It can just switch something around, like it just sets a belief so strongly in your head. Did you know you've probably heard this one before, the reason why Santa Claus, you know, the Christian figure, the reason why old mate is dressed in red and white is because Coca-Cola dressed him up in red and white to suit their brand, and that image of Santa Claus is the most popular image of Santa Claus, and before Coca-Cola did that, he looked like something else. It would be interesting to look up what he did look like. I haven't done that, but that's why Santa Claus is white and red, because Coca-Cola, and then you just take it for granted, you just go, that's how Santa Claus looks, and you don't think about why. Yet another sort of arbitrary random connection. But yeah, whatever you grow up learning or being told is what you believe to be true. Like, for example, we could have all grown up believing that it's inappropriate for males to burp, for example, but it's very sexy and attractive for females to burp. And we would all, like, without a doubt, wholeheartedly believe that, and would be repulsed by a male burp, like, oh my god, you're foul, stop it. And and contrarily, we would be attracted to a female burp, just like, because that's how society is. A female would burp and you'd be like, oh, hitting on me. Should we get out of here, hun? Weird example, but that's just how it works. You'd grow up believing that because everyone else believes it, and you just take it for granted. So yeah, but does that give you a bit of context to what I'm talking about here? It's like, we believe things just because. We just believe them because that's how it is. And when people, I guess when people challenge those things, you're often like, well, what do you mean, man? That's, it's just, and the argument for these things is always just, well, that's just the way it is. You know, like, oh, why is it okay to eat a sheep and a cow, but not a dog and a cat? And it's like, what the fuck do you mean, man? It's just the way it is. But there's never any good argument to these things, you know? And so, anyway, what I'm getting at here is that there are myriads of belief systems and ideologies and, I suppose you could call them cultural norms, that you and I take for granted and don't think twice about. But when you actually do stop to think about these things from a rational standpoint, they start to look pretty flippant, stupid, and unnecessary. And you start wondering, why is it like that? And why is the world rah-de-rah-de-rah? And so that's what I'm talking about today. The topic is gender conditioning. And what has, I guess, spurred this up or inspired this topic is was a video interview with Robert Webb. And if you've watched The Peep Show, the British comedy, you'll know or you'll recognize Robert Webb. He's not the short brown haired dude, he's the taller blonde guy from The Peep Show. And he's a legend. He's written a book called How Not to Be a Boy, and he talks about in his book growing up and all his experiences with gender conditioning and the way that society sort of shapes boys and shapes girls and goes, you're a male, so this is how things go for males, and this is how males act, and you're a female, so this is rah-de-rah. And so he talks a lot about emotions, and he talks about male emotions. Well, the reason why I like him is because, first of all, he's funny as, he's a good time. Even when he's doing a serious interview, he's cracks all the good jokes. But you can also just tell he's very smart, and he's got his head screwed on, and he's got a very sharp outlook. Sorry, I should put my phone on silent. People be texting me. He's got a very sharp outlook on life. Very accurate. He sees things how they are, and he calls them for what they are, and he's just spot on. He talks about male emotions, which is something that I think about, I guess, more than other people might think about, because he says, and it's, when you think about it, it's just true as hell. And he says that the only real emotion that guys are allowed to feel is anger. And so basically, as a male, you're taught that any emotion that you feel, the appropriate thing to do and the responsible thing as a male to do is to translate whatever emotion that is, say it's jealousy or fear or whatever it is, sadness, you get that and you translate it into anger. And you express that emotion, no matter what it is, as anger. And that way, it won't be frowned upon, and it will be accepted by your peers, and by your family, and by society. Go, the boy's angry, fair enough. And then the other side of the coin is for females, for girls, that it's not ladylike to be angry. You're allowed to cry if you're a girl. God forbid, if a boy cries, it's the least manly, boyish thing you can do is have a cry. It's like, man up. That's actually one thing that Robert Webb talks about is the phrase man up and why it's so fucking catastrophic and stupid and all the reasons why you shouldn't say it. But I'll let him explain that, not me, because 'cause he's good at it. I guess one of the reasons why I sort of have decided that Robert Webb is a flipping good dude is he's an actor and he's a comedian, and he's in a position of fame, and people know him and like him and respect him, and he's using that for a really good reason. And in one of his interviews he said, "I'm in a colossally lucky position." And I thought to myself, I ought to make myself useful, which I heard and was just like, fucking good on you, mate. Because I think that there is a lot of people out there who are either just naturally in a position or have worked themselves into a position where they have a lot of social influence, and a lot of people look up to them, and a lot of people will listen to what they have to say. And my mind just goes, the potential for the influence that that person could have in a good way is just unlimited. But not often will an individual act on that position and or realize that they are in a position to evoke change. And so I sort of reckon that Robert Webb's got his head screwed on by realizing that and taking action, realizing there's a problem. He says masculinity. He says that people tell him masculinity is in crisis, as in masculinity's running out, you know, but oh, people aren't masculine anymore. And his response to that is masculinity is a crisis. And I couldn't agree more, because when you lay it out, this is why I talked about all of that sort of all of those social norms and things we just take for granted, because it gives, I'm hoping that it will give you a little bit of context to understand what I'm saying here about these things which are also social norms and ideologies and things that you just, you know, and you believe, and it's just the way it is. Because the way that he looks at these things, and the way I look at these things is from, I guess, a rational standpoint, going like, if you're feeling sad, on what planet is it going to be better for anyone in the situation for a male to express the sadness as anger? And if you can answer that for me, flick me a message on Instagram, because I'll be well impressed. But I can't think of any situation where, when a person's sad, it's healthier or better for anyone for that person to express the sadness as anger. And but unfortunately, that's what we do. That's just how the world is at the moment. If you're a male and you miss out on something, or you're sad about a breakup, or you're whatever, you get fired, like the only emotion that it's also a relatable sort of a thing as well. I think if a male expresses anger, his peers are able to go, fuck yeah, bro. Oh, man, I'd be angry about that too, man. I'll tell you what, I got so angry the other day at Righty Rah, and it's easy to talk about because it's not a vulnerable emotion. And it can be talked about in an open context within conversation between peers. Without judgment, because that's the acceptable emotion, and you can say to your friends, man, I'm flipping angry, and they're gonna go, flip yeah, man, what are you angry about? Oh, far out. And the sad thing is that if you're sad about something and you say to your friends, Oh man, I'm flippin' sad or whatever. It's people don't know how to react. They go, oof. Doosh. You'll be right. Should we go for a beer? Or poor, should we watch a movie? There's just the, I guess I can only speak from the point of view of a male because I am male and I haven't been a female before, and so from my experience and my 22 years of life, it's sort of become quite obvious that there are, I mean, there are moments where it's acceptable for a guy to be sad, but those circumstances are grave. It's like your mum's died. I can get behind your sadness now that your mum's died. But if you're sad about ruining your new shoes, it's like it's not a relatable, even though that is the natural response to be sad, it's not the acceptable response. Robert says at one stage that boys have been taught to wear their complete lack of self-awareness as a badge. As a badge of honor, as a badge of pride. And he says it's almost as if you don't become a man until you are able to completely stifle all emotions except anger. The thing that I find so crazy about this emotional thing with males is that it's just so unbelievably unhealthy to not allow yourself to have feelings. And the other thing is that emotions are like the most human thing there is. It's like emotional responses are just so ingrained in our human survival system. That's the other thing about emotions is that we don't have emotions just because it's a crack up. Our emotions are a survival technique. For example, anxiety. The reason why we feel anxiety is because we're unsure about the future, and in a primal sort of setting, anxiety is actually an emotion that's going to help you to be ready for anything. You're prepared. It pumps up your body and goes, okay, I'm fucking ready for whatever's going to happen. And I'm telling the brain that we should be feeling fucking anxious because we're not actually sure what's over the crest of this mountain. There could be five mountain lions, and we need to be fucking ready for it when there is. But you bring that emotion into your Joe Public in the office working environment, or into the schooling system, or the working system, and you've got the same primal animal with the same survival emotions, and you pop him in an environment where he's got an assignment due in 2 weeks. What I'm trying to say here is that the emotions react in the same way, even when we're not in life-threatening situations. So you'll get a burst of anxiety as if you really needed that to survive, but what's really going on is you don't want to be in a social situation where you have to make small talk with people, and your body goes, "Oh fuck, we're in trouble here." But it's the emotions. It's an incongruent response because you're not actually in any danger. your body just thinks you are, and there's a disconnection there. But bringing it back to what I was saying before about emotions being the most human response possible, is that, isn't it fucking crazy that there is a list as long as your arm of different emotions and feelings that you can have, and us as males have reduced that down to one, and probably the worst one, anger. Like, what's worse? What's a worse emotion than anger? It's just, how unhealthy is it to just feel angry all the time? And we don't know this, and we don't realize this because we're unaware of it, but we get jealous because a girl that we likes, a girl that you like decides she likes another guy. And so the appropriate response is to be probably sad and jealous because you're jealous of that guy who your crush likes. But you're not just going to sit there and be sad and jealous, because that's not manly. The correct response is to be angry and say, well, I'm going to fucking smash that guy's head in if he doesn't get his act together. Or, you know, you'll just be angry at her, or you'd be angry at him, or angry at yourself is another one. You could just be pissed off at yourself, going, oh, you're not good enough, you stupid idiot, rather than having a healthy response of just being gutted, being like, far out, that sucks. And the thing about that is, if you were able to feel those healthy emotions and go, far out, man, I'm gutted about that. And if you had... Man. Oh yeah, go through it again. I think my dog knows when I'm on a roll. She goes, listens like, sounds like he's on a roll. So he's probably recording that frickin' podcast thing again. Watch me go through this door. Probably not. But, see, Jazz, my dog, I sometimes wonder if she experiences emotions in the purest and rawest form, if that makes sense. As in, she experiences excitement when she's actually got something to be excited about, like going for a walk, and she feels fear when there is actually something to fear. Meaning that if you put my dog on the stage in front of 100,000 people, she wouldn't feel scared or anxious, whereas if you put me on a stage in front of 100,000 people, I definitely would feel scared and anxious, even though my life wasn't in danger or there wasn't a direct threat to my life. I would still be feeling those raw emotions, because I have the brain power, the cognitive ability to assess the situation and come to realize that there's a good chance of embarrassment and or being rejected from the clan, I guess, is that raw response of the clan vibe. But yeah, my dog wouldn't feel anxious or scared. She would just be like, fucking what's going on, mate? And I think that's interesting. Like, she doesn't have the cognitive ability to create situations in her mind which are going to make her worried. Like, she can't go, shit, we're going to go for a walk tomorrow and I've got to do 50 laps of the driveway to warm up for that, and if I don't do that by the time my owner comes downstairs and wants to take me for a walk, then I'm going to be in trouble. Which is the kind of process that we go through. We go, crap, I need to do this essay, and if I don't finish this essay and my lecturer wants me to hand it in, then I'm going to be in trouble. And you get anxious and worried about that. But I don't think your dog can do that. There's a name for this. Learned about it in linguistics last year. Where it's, oh fuck, I'm gonna have to look it up. it's basically it's the idea that I was doing a study on what differentiates the human brain from most animal brains, and of course there was a list of things that made us different, but one of the things was the ability to hypothesize, as in the ability of the human brain to hypothesize about the future, or create future situations in our mind just from our imagination. The basic gist of what I'm saying is that a human can create situations in their mind, and it's not necessarily in the present time. It's a situation in the future, a situation in the past. We can create these sort of imaginary situations in our minds, which can then evoke emotions, as in, if I don't do this, then this is probably going to happen, and that makes me feel this way, anxious or stressed. You know, I'm gonna run late for work, and I can create the image in my head of what's gonna happen when I get to work. My boss is gonna be angry, my colleagues are gonna be looking at me going, fucking done it again, eh? And so you can create that story in your head, and that story can be so vivid in your imagination that it can evoke emotions. I hope you're sticking with me on this one. I've gotten really sidetracked now. I've gotten really sidetracked, which is okay because that's the nature of podcasts. But coming back to our mate Robert Webb, who I was planning to talk about for most of this podcast. One thing he said about his book is that he didn't mention the word feminist much. And he said, when asked why that was, he said, because I wanted people to read it. And that stood out to me, and I found it quite funny because you say the word feminist and people just switch off. They just switch off. They go feminist, boom, click away. And it's because there's such a stigma behind the word feminism and feminist. You just, you know, for feminazi, fucking crazy. To be honest, there's stigmas behind nearly every type of person, but the feminist belief system, you know, it's basically, do you believe in equality for males and females? And if the answer is yes, you're pretty much a feminist. It's pretty, I don't, I, you know, obviously there's lots of non-feminists out there, but I struggle to imagine how you could be in this day and age. I know we're very much still in the dark ages in a lot of ways, but I mean, come on. You know, cop onto yourself if you're not a feminist. The interviewer was asking Robert Webb about, he's got two daughters, and asking him about, you know, does he teach his daughters about all of this type of stuff, you know, gender roles and inequality, suppression and feminism and all that sort of stuff. Do you teach your little kids and your daughters about this? And he was basically just saying, yeah, like, of course I do. And he was saying he doesn't hold back, and he explained, like, kind of the reasoning behind that. One of the things he said was for them to be able to name it when they see it, talking about, you know, inequality and gender roles and all that stuff, for them to be able to name it when they see it is to be forewarned and forearmed, and I think it's a fairly straightforward duty of care, which I was like, nice, I agree with that. It's to just to inform and to allow your kids. Obviously, you know, you don't want to be telling your 2-year-old, oh, there's a lot of suppression out there in the world. Yeah, careful. You're a female, you're gonna have it tough in this life. You shouldn't be telling your 2-year-old that, not that they're gonna understand that anyway. But I do agree with him in the sense that when the time is right, and often when the time is right is gonna be when they're starting to notice shit like this, you know, going like, oh, if I wear, going like, oh, if I wear a Spider-Man suit to the dress-up party instead of a princess suit, Dad, is there going to be a problem? And yeah, there probably will be a problem. You could probably going to be told that you are dressed up as, you know, you're a girl. You should be wearing a princess thing. And so, you know, when those conversations start to happen, then I totally agree with them. It's for them to be, for you to be open and honest. They're going to appreciate that for starters. They're going to appreciate that when they get older. They're going to go like flipping shot, Dad, for telling me about all that sort of stuff. And it totally is to, it forewarns and forearms them like 100%. It's like you're he's equipping his children with the knowledge and yeah, I guess the knowledge and the awareness, to be able to deal with those situations and realize and notice it and name it and realize that, you know, that is the way it is, but it's not necessarily a good thing, or it's not necessarily something you have to adhere to, is the other thing. The other thing that, this tendency to only express anger, the other effect that that has on, of course, there's many detrimental effects on your own mental health, and you know, the damaging effects that that has on the people that surround you are, you know, a lot worse than if you were able to feel emotions and express them in a healthy way that wasn't sacrificing or jeopardizing the happiness or mental health of those around you, because that's essentially what it does, you know. You storming around the house being an angry bugger. What are your kids going to think about that? Or what are your girlfriend or your flatmates or whatever? Now, I guess I'm a bit of a big believer in destigmatizing things, because there are a lot of things that are stigmatized, which I think are flipping stupid. And one of them is male emotions, which you'll will have picked up by the stage of the podcast that this is what it's been predominantly about. And it's just because it's just such a huge elephant in every room is male emotions. They just get, yeah, it's you don't talk about it either. No one talks about male emotions. It's just, which is craziness, because you know, emotions are such a big part of our life. You feel them at any moment. You can't not be feeling an emotion unless you're freaking dead inside. In which case, you'll have a lot of people jealous of you. I watched a TED talk recently. You guys are going to get sick of me talking about TED talks, but this is a good one, I promise. It was a man who had 5 kids. I think he had 5 kids. And he now has 4 kids because his youngest child, who was 12, 13, very young, committed a suicide. Sorry, died by suicide. You shouldn't say committed suicide, because committed implies that it's a crime, and although it is a crime in some places, it's just not good to be saying that, because you don't want to put that kind of a pressure on, well, not maybe not necessarily pressure, because, but that kind of, just negative energy, you know. It's not a very nice belief to think that someone taking their own life should be a punishable crime, even though they're dead. Makes no sense. And he was doing a TED talk because he wanted to share with the world his experience of being a dad and the mistakes that he thinks that he made that maybe contributed to the death of his son. And I won't bore you with everything that he said, but the main message that he had for parents was, he said that he wouldn't show any emotions to his son, he wouldn't share any hard feelings or any of the tough stuff. That would all be hidden from his kids, and the only side to him that they would see is dad's okay, and dad is always okay. Dad never feels any sadness or stress or pain. Dad is the superhero, and that's what parents are to, you know, nearly all kids. Your parent is your superhero. They're the one that you look up to, and so what happens when your superhero, the only emotions that they have are positive or angry, meaning a lack of vulnerability. So you go, I'm either pissed off at you because you've slammed the door, don't do that again. Your parent figure has anger, or they're just, everything's okay, everything's all good, nothing's wrong. So those are the two sort of settings. And so he was just explaining how he was never vulnerable with his children. And he said that he missed out on being his son's father because he was too busy being his superhero, which struck a chord with me, I guess. I was just going, you know, I think more parents need to hear that, you know, although you are your kid's superhero, you need to be vulnerable and show them that you are human with human emotions and you're not invincible, because the repercussions of that is, he said, because I didn't show any vulnerability to my son, he didn't think it was okay to show vulnerability, and he thought it was inappropriate. And, you know, the family environment, dad doesn't want to hear about my problems, I don't want to hear about his, and that's why he doesn't tell me. So because the father wasn't vulnerable and open about his emotions, whatever they were, that resulted in the son reflecting that. And he said that because I was like that with him when he was going through a tough time, and of course he was, because he ended up dying by suicide, he didn't share any of that with his dad. And looking back, he noticed a change in his son, but the son didn't share any of that with him because he just didn't think that was appropriate, didn't think that was okay. And had the father grown up or raised the son being vulnerable, being his hero, but also being a real human that has tough emotions like stress and anxiety, had he done that, then the son, there would have been a higher chance that the son would have opened up to his father about the tough stuff that was happening to him, or this tough stuff that he was going through. And who knows, he was saying, you know, that could have prevented the death of his son. And so that kind of, I guess, links in nicely with that, all that sort of gender roles and emotional suppression that males undergo. And I'm not saying that females don't experience any of this, because of course females, everyone experiences this, and it's something that applies to everyone, but it's kind of there are a different set of rules for males and a different set of rules for females. You know, males aren't allowed to cry, females are allowed to cry, but we shouldn't be angry, and things like this. But yeah, this podcast, I've just predominantly been speaking from my own experience as a male, because that's what I have the most experience with. And so I hope you've gotten something out of this week's podcast, and I hope I have encouraged you, if you are a male, to, I don't know, I hope maybe I've inspired you to be aware of when maybe you're feeling jealous or you're feeling stressed or something, and notice when that comes out as anger, and catch yourself, because you do have to catch yourself, and if you don't, no one else is going to catch you. And I have to catch myself, that's anger, and what I'm actually feeling is something else. So there's an incongruence between what you're feeling and what you're expressing. And so catching yourself and being your own emotional detective is a skill to be learned, because most of us haven't been taught to do that, and your schools sure don't teach you that, and university doesn't teach you that. And it's kind of something that goes untalked about, but is quite important for everyone in their day-to-day life, because controlling your emotions and being aware of your emotions and being able to handle them is, it plays a huge part in how successful in life you are, I guess. The success as in your happiness, and the success in relationships and friendships, and you know, the relationship with your kids or your parents. So yeah, I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. It's been a very long one. This is a very long podcast, probably the longest I've done. So thanks for sticking with me here at the end. And if you have been enjoying the podcast, please do take a minute out of your day to write me a little review on iTunes, on the app that you're listening to this on, or subscribe, so as you get my little nice little flash little notification next time I release a podcast. And the other thing is, recommend it to a friend if you think of a friend who might like the podcast or might benefit from it in any way, then let them know. Send them a link and go check this out, because podcasts are a lot of fun. I love podcasts. They're wicked. Go in peace. Have a good rest of your week. And I'll talk to you again next Wednesday about something new. I've been receiving lovely positive feedback from you folk, and please keep that coming, because I can't tell you how much it pumps me up when someone says, hey, that was a good episode, or I really liked when you said this, or whatever. It keeps me motivated. And I've had a topic request to talk a little bit about astronomy, so there's a subtle hint on what the next week's podcast may or may not be about. Enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.